You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Protecting some of Michigan's most vulnerable, our seniors. That's the mission of a task force Attorney General Dana Nessel has rolled out, noting some 73,000 elderly people in Michigan are suffering some kind of elder abuse. This task force includes lawmakers, state Supreme Court justices, and others. Allison Herschel is director and managing attorney of the Michigan Elder Justice Initiative and the elder law attorney at the Michigan Poverty Law Program, and she is one of the members of this newly created task force. Allison, why is this task force needed?
Well, I have to say I was extremely excited when this task force was announced. I've never heard public officials name the issues that this task force is talking about, and I certainly haven't heard public officials before really express a strong commitment to solving some of those problems. One of the main issues that the task force is addressing initially is some of the problems that we see in our guardianship system. And that's the system where someone is alleged to be incapacitated, and if the court agrees that they are incapacitated, a guardian can be appointed for them. But in our guardianship system across the state, last year, more than 10,000 petitions for guardianship were granted. But according to the Supreme Court statistics, fewer than 150 were denied. We know that many of those hearings last only a few minutes. We know that often the person who's alleged to be incapacitated isn't present. We know that there's often not very strong evidence about the person's ability to function and need for a guardian and whether less restrictive alternatives are available. And we know that people who are alleged to be incapacitated are often not represented by a lawyer in those hearings.
So does it feel, in a sense, that it's kind of rubber stamped through?
Well, I think the figures do speak for themselves, given that more than 10,000 petitions were granted and fewer than 150 were denied. It is hard to have a judge make a well-considered decision when a person is often not present, is often not represented by a lawyer, and the hearings are so short. And then, of course, when a guardian is appointed, usually it's a plenary guardian, which means that the guardian has the obligation to make almost all decisions in the person's life, including where they live and what medical treatment they get and what happens to their home and their possessions.
And I'm wondering, before we go further, who can apply to be guardians and what kind of background and criminal checks are there?
In our state, there is no licensure or certification requirement for professional guardians. Often a guardian is appointed who's a family member, but very often a guardian is appointed who's just an agency or an individual who is willing to serve as guardian. There is no requirement that they have any particular training or experience. And so that is a real concern, and one of the task force's very first initiatives is to require professional guardians to become certified and to require minimum training and professional standards and also bonds for these individuals. A number of other states do this, and now it looks like Michigan might well be one of the states that does, and that would be a huge advantage for us because we would finally know that the people who are responsible for our mothers and our fathers are people who have certain training and requirements and people that we can identify and whose work we can track.
Right now, and actually, it strikes me that we're not just talking mothers and fathers, but it could be, as you say, incapacitated adults, so it could be our brothers, it could be cousins, aunts, uncles. So we're talking about beyond the elderly then, if we're talking about reforms in guardianships. And I'm wondering, is there evidence that the system that we have in place now in Michigan are leading to the elderly or people who are incapacitated being taken advantage of? What does this look like?
Well, we do see that in my office every week. In part, there's an issue that because some professional guardians have more than 300 or even 400 people that they're responsible for, it's very difficult to give the kind of individual attention and concern for each individual when you're responsible for hundreds of people's lives. Sometimes that leads to neglect. Sometimes that leads to abuse. And then certainly in cases even where professional guardians don't have hundreds of wards, or even when it's a family member, sometimes we do see cases, not infrequently, where that guardian is not providing for people's most basic needs, is not making good choices about the care they receive, and is not being responsible about their finances.
What reforms do you most want to see come out of this task force when it comes to guardianships?
I think the ones that the task force listed as their initial initiatives are particularly important. I have been very concerned about the fact that our guardians aren't certified or licensed for years, and I'm delighted that that's one of the very first things that this task force will address. Some other issues that they're addressing regarding guardianship that I think are really important is a more careful look at when a guardian removes a person from their home, because we see that often guardianship is a pipeline to the nursing home. What happens is a guardian's appointed, they take the person out of their home, they move them into a nursing home because that often is an easier place to oversee that person's life. And then very quickly, their homes are sold, all their possessions are sold or disposed of. So under the Elder Abuse Task Force initiative, the guardian would have to present the court with a written plan exploring all alternatives to removal. So they would have to look at, you know, can we get home and community-based services that would serve this person? Is there another way we can keep this person in their home? They'd also have to look if the person's home is sold. The court would have to review carefully the documents related to that sale to make sure that the sale was done in the person's best interest and that the appropriate sale price was obtained so that the person does benefit from the sale of that house. Another thing is that, as I said, some professional guardians have hundreds of people for whom they're responsible. The task force is suggesting that it will limit the number of wards per guardian, and I think that's hugely important because there's no way a guardian can really pay personal attention to the very important aspects of a person's life if they're responsible for so many people. And then I think there's some other important proposals. For example, one of the initiatives is that guardianship hearings should have the person present, which is already required in law but often doesn't happen. And there has to be medical testimony. There really has to be real evidence that the person is incapacitated and needs a guardian. So that's an important proposed initiative as well.
Allison Herschel is one of the members of the newly formed Michigan Elder Abuse Task Force. Thanks so much for speaking with us. I know we'll be following the work as it progresses.
Thank you very much.
And we turn now to Georgia Kalis, who's vice president of the board of directors for the Michigan Guardianship Association. Your association represents how many professional guardians in Michigan?
Right now, we have 149 professional guardians, which is down from 300 10 years ago.
Oh, that's so you're down a lot. Why is that?
Well, most people don't realize that professional guardians work for free for about half of their caseloads.
Give us a sense of what people do when they're our professional guardian.
So we have two types of clients, the vulnerable senior that lives out in the community. We get clients in from Adult Protective Services, pretend that Mr. and Mrs. Jones lived in a community. Months go by and the neighbors start realizing they haven't seen Mr. Jones for a long time. They might call Adult Protective Services and a representative will go in and find out that Mr. Jones passed away and that Mrs. Jones, who has Alzheimer's disease, has been taking care of herself and the electricity is off and the food is rotten. And Adult Protective Services goes to the probate court and asks for a public guardian to be assigned because they couldn't find any family members or anybody else that would be willing to step up to do that.
And then, so vulnerable seniors, and what's the other group?
The mentally ill client who is on Social Security disability, and they come through the community mental health system. Typically, this client is much younger, bipolar, schizophrenic, not taking their medication, not wanting to live in a group home. When we get those clients, there is no funding whatsoever in the state of Michigan right now for a guardian to get paid to take care of the CMH client. For the vulnerable adult side, we get paid through Medicaid $83 per month to take care of someone's complete life.
When you heard that the Attorney General's office was putting together this task force, and they tell us that they've connected with your staff, they are still recruiting members for the task force, and it fully expects your group to be at the table. What are your hopes for this task force?
We're hoping, first and foremost, to provide education to legislators and to the Attorney General's office. MGA has had our third Capitol Day this March, and we've met with every single senator and House of Representatives to try to explain what the public guardian situation is in Michigan. And rather than the task force looking at guardians as being the enemy, we're hoping that we're going to be able to educate them to realize that we are the last safety net that this state has. I'm a member of the National Guardianship Association, and I'm a registered guardian through National. We don't have any sort of registration process in Michigan, and we'd love to, but it's really hard to ask a tiny population of people to get a license or to register when you're expecting them to work for free.
Some public guardians have you know, hundreds of wards, 300 to 400 wards, we've heard. What is your reaction to people who worry that a guardian cannot possibly take the best care of so many people?
I think the number has to be in ratio to the staff. And I think that there are companies around the state that are getting larger and larger. And the reason for that is the smaller companies are going out of business. At Michigan Guardianship Association, we put on 2 conferences a year, and we're constantly recruiting for new guardians to come in. But again, with the expense of a public guardian, you have to have a very large liability insurance policy. We're expected to do everything for the clients, place them, make their medical decisions, run their Social Security, change their mail. We do absolutely everything that a family would do, and yet we're complete strangers to them when we first get them. And so I think that the numbers, so long as a company that's large has enough staff to do it, I don't think there should ever be a cap on the number that an individual can have.
When you say that public guardians get nothing for taking care of people who are mentally incapacitated, so that is all that work for zero, or does money come in through some other source?
It's worse than zero, to be honest with you. When I get the phone call from the court that I was appointed to be somebody's guardian, I don't know if it's going to be Mrs. Jones, the $83 client, or if it's going to be Kevin, the $0 client. But either way, I have to go down to court, pay $20 to park, go into the courthouse, and then I have to pay $12 to buy my letters of guardianship. So I'm $32 out before I even get in. And then from that point, I'm court required to see these clients, even if we don't get paid. I'm court required to take care of them and to make sure that all of their needs are met. And we don't pick and choose the clients that we get. And so what's happened is the professional guardians that are companies get upside down, where they have more free clients than they have paying clients. It's a business model that can't be sustained. Guardianship companies are closing right now in the state of Michigan at a rate of 10 per year.
Where will this end?
The worst ending would be the Michigan Guardianship Association members decide that this is something that we just can't do anymore, and then the state of Michigan would have to come in and create a public guardianship system, which would be like an adult protective services. So all 83 counties in the state, the probate courts would have an office of a guardian, and then they would become a ward of the court, where right now they're a ward to whoever their guardian is. Then the state of Michigan would assume 100% of the responsibility for a state staff person to be making someone's medical decisions. It sets up for a giant liability should a state employee do the do not resuscitate order and the client passes away, and then years down the road, family come back and say, you didn't resuscitate my grandmother, I'm going to sue the state of Michigan. Where now I have a professional liability for my medical decision making for me and my staff. So we are saving the state of Michigan hundreds of millions of dollars, but we can't get anybody to hear that they need to help save what they already have for free. And instead, we feel like now a task force is going to come to micromanage and, you know, cast a negative eye towards what we're doing. And they don't realize the manipulation, the exploitation, the neglect, that's how I get my client. And unfortunately, it's usually a family member or a neighbor that is the bad guardian. And Comerica Bank will call Adult Protective Services saying Mrs. Smith is being brought into the bank every day with the little girl that lives next door to her, and they're withdrawing $5,000 a day. And then Adult Protective Services goes into the court. Next thing you know, I'm the guardian, the public guardian. And then we have to go back behind it and realize, you know, $50,000 has been stolen. We account to the court for everything that's done. We try to go to prosecute, you know, the person who was exploiting. But I'm looking forward to educating the task force that the public guardian is the safety net. We're not the bad guy.
Georgia Kalis, Vice President of the Board of Directors for the Michigan Guardianship Association. Thank you so much for talking with us on Stateside Georgia.
Thank you so much, Cindy. It was my pleasure.